I want to start by telling you a little bit, rehearsing with you, a little bit about a group of folks that were in desperate fear. Had to do with the people that started with Abraham in the long ago. And the family continued to grow through Isaac and Jacob and then to Joseph. You remember Joseph was sold into slavery in Egypt. And eventually he brought his entire family down into Egypt. And after some time, they became slaves to the Pharaoh in Egypt. And for 400 years, they were slaves in that foreign land, still clinging to that promise that was made to Abraham many, many years before, that they would be given the promised land. And finally, Moses was sent to deliver the people from Egyptian bondage. And he, through those 10 awesome plagues, convinced Pharaoh that he must let the people go. And so Pharaoh was apparently glad to get rid of them at first. And so they got ready and left toward the Red Sea and the Promised Land. But before they could cross the Red Sea, Pharaoh changed his mind. He said to himself, "What have I done? We will no longer have the service of all of these people. And that's going to be a hardship on our people." And so he got his army ready with all his chariots, the soldiers and the horses, and took out after the Jews to bring them back. And here the Jews are on the edge of the Red Sea, and they hear that Pharaoh's army is coming, and they are scared to death. That's the first instance of fear that I want to think with you a little bit about tonight. The Israelites were in the grip of fear at the Exodus. They were facing the Red Sea, some 3 million estimated Jews who know nothing about fighting, have no weapons to fight with, and here comes an army after them, coming up from behind them. There is panic among the people. They are terrified. They attack Moses, first of all, and say, "Moses, when we were in Egypt, didn't we tell you, leave us alone and let us serve the Egyptians? At least we have a place to stay. We have food to eat. Yes, we're slaves, but you have brought us out here in the desert, and we're going to die, many of us, no doubt. If not from Pharaoh's army, because we're destitute, we have nothing to make a living with here in the desert." So they're terrified at the thought. They're very fearful for their future. Well, the Lord saw that they were delivered. And Moses summons up the courage to reassure them. And he gives them an admonition. We read about it in Exodus chapter 14. Moses answered the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again." I wonder if they really believed what Moses said. I know they were still trembling because their situation seemed so desperate. But you know the rest of the story, that the Lord delivered Israel with an unbelievable and in an unimaginable way. God said, stretch your staff out over the waters of the Red Sea, and they'll be parted, and the people of Israel can walk across that seabed on dry ground. And you think about the enormity of that opening in that body of water. It had to be considerably wide. I have no idea how wide it was. But you think about moving 3 million people along with their cattle, their herds, and whatever else they had. And you have a tremendous job to move a group of people any distance. And when it's going across the dry bed of a sea, you know God had a hand in it. But he did. Effect, probably, and maybe we can say for sure, the greatest deliverance of human beings ever in the history of mankind. Their fears were, you see, unfounded. They were right to be afraid. I suspect every one of us would have been afraid. But they learned to trust in God, and God delivered his people on that occasion. But people today, even Christians, still have fears. Now, I'm not going to try to burden you with a lot of new fears. You can find plenty to be afraid of just by watching the evening news. People are scared today. They're nervous. They're afraid of what might happen in the future. I want us to deal with some of those fears tonight. And when I think about fear, the first thing that comes to mind is the word phobia. Phobia, a special kind of fear. I found a dictionary definition of phobia. It's an irrational, excessive, and persistent fear of some particular thing or situation. A fear, a dread, or a hatred. There are many different forms of fear, you see. Phobia is one of those. You'd be surprised how widespread those phobia fears really are. These are real fears, and they must be recognized, and they must be dealt with by all, and especially by those who suffer from them. Now, I'm going to mention some. They're going to be familiar terms to you. These are very common fears and only become real problems when they are excessive and uncontrollable. The next slide I show you will show you a list of the 10 most common phobias, which are recognized by mental health authorities. And I want you to notice that each one of us has at least an inkling, a little bit, of each one of these phobias. A certain degree or a certain amount of these fears are normal and actually desirable and necessary at times. And here's the list. I got this list from Google, by the way. This is the list that I found. The first is glossophobia, the fear of public speaking. Anybody have any of that? Don't show your hand. I know there are many who don't have that ability to stand up and talk before a group of people. Necrophobia, the fear of death or dying. Anybody here not fear death? Not a one. But it's when the fear is excessive and uncontrollable that it becomes a problem. It's a normal thing, but in its extreme, it becomes a real problem. Arachnophobia, the fear of spiders. Spiders are like snakes to me. The only good one is a dead one. And if I see one, I'm going to do my best to snuff out his existence. I don't like spiders. I don't think you do either. Some people handle them and they know what they're doing. I don't. To me, they're all bad. Then there's nyctophobia, the fear of darkness. Now, you better have a little bit of that. Think about it. If you don't have any fear of darkness, you could step in a deep well and hit the bottom. You could stumble over a footstool, like I have done many times in my front room in the dark. You could do many kinds of harm to yourself if you don't have some respect for the darkness. But it's the excessive fear of darkness that becomes a problem. At Abilene Christian, at least one semester, I sat right beside a fellow by the name of Bobby. I don't remember his last name, but he was a spelunker. You know what a spelunker is? It's a fellow that likes to explore caves. He goes deep down into the earth where there is no light at all. And all he has is a little light on his helmet. And he told me about some of the experiences he'd had in spelunking. That's not for me. I went through Carlsbad Caverns out in New Mexico a couple of times as a young man. And when you get down to a big, great room, they call it, they turn out all the lights. And it is dark. So dark you can feel it. Some people can't take that. But excessive fear is what nyctrophobia is all about. Acrophobia, the fear of heights. Highest I want to be is climbing on a 6-foot ladder, and I don't want to go beyond the third step of that ladder. But some people can't stand even that much. It's a phobia. Sociophobia, the fear of socializing or being in a crowded place. I've been told, I know one man who has a problem being in a crowd. He is uncomfortable. That happens. Aerophobia, the fear of flying. I've known some people who would not dare get on an airplane. They'll take a train, they'll take a bus, they'll drive their own car or ride with somebody else, but they will not get on an airplane. Now, my dad didn't fear airplanes, but he said, "Son, never put down all your weight on one of those things, because you never know." But there are people who have that kind of fear. Claustrophobia. I know some folks who have that problem. It's real. They just cannot stay in a confined place. You may be up for an x-ray of a certain kind where they slide you inside this big tube and all these noises going on, the lights flashing or whatever. Some people just can't take that. I've known some who requested they be put to sleep when this x-ray is done. Claustrophobia is a very real thing. Some people can't ride in an elevator. It's a real thing. Agoraphobia is the exact opposite of claustrophobia. Fear of an open space. Agora is the name given to a Greek market. A big open space in most villages and towns in ancient Italy, where I saw this thing. And some people just can't stand that wide open space. Brontophobia, fear of lightning and thunder. And again, that's not a bad thing, is it? If you hear thunder, you need to look for shelter, because lightning is going to follow. So while these are phobias, and unfortunately some people suffer excessive problems with these things, a little bit of it is not bad. We need to learn how to recognize and to deal with the fears that we have, whatever they may be. All of us have fears, some good, some bad. We're told that a baby fears only two things. You remember what those are? Falling and a loud noise. Now that's what I've read. There are other things that make a baby uncomfortable and fussy, but these are things that are really sensed by the baby as fears. A recent poll of teenagers revealed a number of interesting fears that they hold. I thought this was interesting enough to share with you, because teenagers have a pretty rough go sometimes. And they have some fears that the rest of us don't understand and think are unusual. But we'll look at them one by one. 57% in this survey, this poll, feared nuclear war. Anybody here not have some thoughts about that? That's something teenagers evidently worry about quite a bit. The death of parents, 54% were afraid that their parents might die sometime and they would be left alone. Failing at school, 44%. 43% had a fear of dying. Get a little sick and they think this is it. Having a car accident, 34% were nervous about that. 33% feared loneliness, being rejected by their friends or being left alone with no friends around. 30% feared not having a boyfriend or a girlfriend. I don't know why it is, but we all seem to have one girlfriend or one boyfriend at least all the time. Teenagers fear being beaten and injured, 29% in this survey. You suspect maybe they lived in a larger town, a great metropolis, with a huge school, gangs and bullies all around. They sometimes feared for being beaten and injured. 28% were worried about getting sick, catching some sort of disease. And 28% feared rejection, rejection by their peers. Now, I suspect that's a pretty low figure. We all experience some fears of rejection. You ever been turned down for a promotion? You ever been denied a position that was open to you and to others? I'll say more about that later. There are some fears that we need to have that are natural, and we need to recognize them and to deal with them. The fear of want, that is being poor. I remember one year when, on about the ninth day of August, my father's cotton crop was beaten into the ground with hail. We had nothing. He made nothing that year. And we started picking cotton for our neighbor. And I worried, what are we going to do? We have no money. We're not going to have any crop this year. What's going to happen? Sometimes people lose their job. I've known men. My son was without a job for several months. I don't know how he survived, but he did. But that's not a pleasant place to be, unemployed, unable to work and provide for your family. That's a horrible fear. When you get ready to retire, you wonder, am I going to be able to survive on that little Social Security check? What's going to happen? Am I going to have enough to take care of myself and maybe that little lady that has lived with me for these 59 years in July the 14th? These are some fears that we need, that we have, and that we need to take into consideration and deal with them. We have fears of sickness. I don't know how many heart attacks I thought I've had and how many brain tumors and other ailments that I have suspected I was in for. We fear getting sick. We fear sorrow, occasions of grief, and even loneliness. We fear failure. Yet, everybody fails at some time or other. But we have to learn to deal with that kind of fear and keep on keeping on. Work through our failures. We fear death. Although it's inevitable, we still don't like to think about dying. I've tried to prepare for some of these things. One of that, the death part of it is one of those things that I've tried to plan for, but not right away. Everybody fears rejection. Preachers are some of the worst, I guess. They fear being rejected. I don't know how many times I have tried out as a prospective preacher, only to be passed over, surprisingly, to me. But it happens. When I was a minister with a church in Tuscaloosa, the Central Church, right after graduation from college, there was a young teenage boy who was in my teenage class. He later on grew up and went to the University of Alabama, lived in Tuscaloosa, played in the big purple, big red band, and got a job, a good job, with a big company. They moved him to Memphis, Tennessee. And there came a time when he had an opportunity to be promoted, but he was passed over. He just could not deal with that. He took his own life. Fine young man with a beautiful little wife and a child or two, I don't know. Failure or rejection can really be a problem. We have to learn to deal with that. These fears are not necessarily bad. Some are actually good. They are a part of natural human existence. It is only when they are excessive and crippling that they become bad. We have to learn to deal with them rationally. Some fears we all need to have. Ecclesiastes 12. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. That's a healthy fear we all need to have. But let me say this too, that this is not an awful, dreadful, terrifying fear that we need to have of God and the judgment, but it's a healthy, helpful reverence and respect for God and for His will. That's a good fear to have. This means being aware of His presence at all times and in every decision we make and every action we take. And I've included a reference here to Brother Lawrence. Some friends of mine loaned me a little book that was composed of some meditations of a monk that lived in a monastery somewhere. And he did what he called practice the presence of God. He made it his purpose every day and every hour of the day to remember and to practice the presence of God. That's a good thing. We need to realize that God is always there present, and we need to fear displeasing Him. That's a healthy fear and a good one. This means considering God's will before we consider our own. We need to fear loss. That's a hard thing to do sometimes, experience a loss, and we fear. You need some proof? Yes, we have to have faith and trust in God to supply our needs, but we must not be naive, careless, and irresponsible. We must be good stewards of what the Lord blesses us with, and that includes having a fear of losing what He's blessed us with, because it can happen. That's the reason why we buy insurance. And I say that insurance is good for many things. Life insurance, particularly for a young couple who's starting their family, they need to find some way to have some insurance on their life, so that if something happens and they're no longer there to take care of their family, whether it's their children, their wife, their mother, their father, that depends on them, a little insurance can go a long way. Eventually, when the parents pass away, the kids are up and grown and gone from home, maybe it's just that little lady that has been in your home all these years that you need to take care of after you're gone. So insurance can serve its purpose. Your home is one of the biggest investments you'll ever make, and you need to protect that home. Young people sometimes make a mistake in buying a big, beautiful, nice home with beautiful furnishings, and they forget that all of this can be swept away in a hurricane in Mobile, or a tornado, or a flood, or a fire. They happen everywhere. That comes with ownership of the home. We need to fear losing that kind of thing. We need to be fearful of harm, keep our family out of harm's way if possible, our loved ones and innocent people we need to try to protect. We need to fear being a bad example before children and before the unsaved and the untaught. Our example is so important in the lives of children who look to us as examples of what Christian people ought to be. I suppose that the criticism of the lives of members of the church is probably the greatest obstacle to converting people in our time. Sometimes people who claim to be Christians don't come across as Christians to those outside the church. We need to be very careful. We need to be fearful that our bad example will bring sadness and disappointment to others. Fear of being misunderstood. I've been misunderstood several times over the last 50 some odd years that I've been trying to preach. I do my best to say what I think and what I want to say. Sometimes I don't say it well, and sometimes I say it just exactly right, but someone misunderstands it. So we need to be fearful of being misunderstood. People have died, you know, because they got the wrong message. They misunderstood what was said or what was done. Fear of discouraging those who are seeking truth, those trying to improve and grow in their faith. We need to be afraid when we talk with other people about the most precious thing they have, their soul. We do not want to discourage them or to turn them away. We need to be fearful of discouragement. Fear can be harmful and bad, and here are some fears that are definitely bad. Fear can paralyze us, keep us from doing what we need to do and what we must do just because we are afraid. I don't know how many people through the years have told me, I just don't think I can live the Christian life. I don't believe I can remain faithful. I'm not ready to make that commitment. I'm afraid I might fail. That's a real fear, unfortunately, and it prevents many people from making their peace with God before they meet the grim reaper. Fear can destroy our usefulness and our service in the kingdom of Christ. Fear can take away our happiness in life if we allow it. Fear can hinder our growth and development as Christians and servants of God if we let it. Fear can destroy our faith and trust in God if we allow it to. Fear can keep us from speaking to those who need to hear the gospel and be saved. I've been there. You have too, I guess. Sometimes we're fearful. People won't be open to studying. And they may slam the door in our face. They may say, I'm not interested, go on. And we don't like that kind of rejection, do we? Fear can keep us from speaking to the wayward and the unfaithful. That's a tremendous challenge for me, and I think it is probably for you. You're concerned about someone that you know is not doing right, not living like the Christian should. They've become unfaithful in their service to God. You feel for them. You wish they could find their way back. But we're afraid we'll offend them or maybe even drive them further away. We need to overcome that fear. Matthew 25, verses 24 to 30. Then the man who had received the one talent came. Master, he said, I know that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown, and reaping where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. His master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I was a servant was I harvest where I have not sown, and gather where I have not scattered seed? Well, then you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers, so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. Take the talent from him and give it to the one who had the 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. I think sometimes about the early church. Most of the congregations were house churches, home churches, small groups of people. And I have tried to envision Peter and Paul and the others who worshiped with these small house churches. And I can see them sitting down and talking about the facts of life, everyday problems that arise. They didn't always deal with complicated theological questions or doctrines. They talked about life as it was, from day to day. But that's what I've been trying to do today. Let's think about dealing with those fears that sometimes paralyze us, that sometimes terrify us and keep us from doing what we know we need to do. Finally, let me say, keep fear in its proper perspective. You need the fear to fail to obey the gospel of Christ. I say that without hesitation. You need to be afraid to face God in the judgment, unprepared. 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, 2 Thessalonians 1, verse 8. He will punish, that is Jesus, those who do not know God and do not obey the gospel of our Lord Jesus. That's what the scripture says. It's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of God unprepared. Secondly, you need to fear to meet the Lord unprepared and guilty of sin in your life. Matthew 25, verse 41, Jesus said, then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. Those are the ones who meet the Lord unprepared. Christian, non-Christian, doesn't matter. There's sin in your life tonight. You need to deal with it. Be afraid to meet God without having taken care of that need. If you need to respond to his invitation, we pray you'll come tonight while we stand and sing.